Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
This is Bloomberg Business of Sports.
Sports is business. And whenever you are procuring talent, you must start with a criteria.
Being owners of this league and wanting our league to be the best in the world, how do we make it better?
The valuations are getting so high, the list of people who could purchase a team is getting really short.
We have 8 strategic investment areas when you look at the world of sports.
The NBA is already in 210 countries around the world.
NFL is an amazing thing for the sports betting industry.
We have the World Cup coming in 2026 in North America.
Hey, if I get $1 million, we're going to a school. Trust me, I'll be there.
Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr.
I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Damian Sassauer.
Coming up on the show today, we'll get you ready for the NBA All-Star break in Indianapolis with Mel Raines, president and COO of the Indiana Pacers.
We've got active DJs downtown. We've got some artistic lighting. We're activating some spaces with local diverse food offerings. And so we have free bus rides downtown for the weekend. So everyone in our community can come downtown. If you don't have a ticket to the game, you can still come downtown and be a part of the weekend, which is really important to us.
We'll also hear about some big money moves in the world of golf, including Tiger Woods' new deal with TaylorMade Golf. All that and more is straight ahead on the Bloomberg Business of Sports. But first, the biggest sports story heading into the week, of course, was the big game. The Kansas City Chiefs are repeat Super Bowl champions.
For the first time in 6,944 days, there is a back-to-back Super Bowl champion, and it is the Kansas City Chiefs.
Over 123 million viewers in the U.S. tuned in to CBS to see the Chiefs win, making it the most watched program in U.S. TV history. That record-setting amount of viewers also saw all those Super Bowl commercials, which reportedly cost about $7 million per ad. For a look at some of the most impactful ads, Bloomberg Radio hosts Alex Steele and Paul Sweeney spoke with Kevin Krim. He's the CEO of EDO, a firm that measures the immediate impact of advertising across streaming and traditional TV. He talked about some of the spots he thought worked best.
Let's talk about real quick the top five. Number one was Deadpool 3. Number two was...
I have thoughts on that I'm a huge Deadpool person.
There you go.
Love it. But then again, he could come on, Ryan Reynolds could come on and say hello, and I'd be like, that was brilliant. That was amazing.
It was a fun spot. And the tease of having Wolverine joining him is very satisfying for any Marvel fan. Number two was the film adaptation of Wicked. Another interesting teaser, Ariana Grande in one of the starring roles there. So that's going to pick up a lot of attention. And then number three was the Volkswagen ad that, you know, kind of harkened back to their heritage of bringing the Beetle to America. And then it teased their new all-electric bus. So the VW bus returning to America after a long gap. Number four was Temu. Or Temu, as we all learned, was how to pronounce it yesterday. They ran six spots between pregame, in-game, and postgame. Six spots. Mm-hmm. That's a huge investment.
Yep.
But this is an interesting one. A lot of people's opinion of that kind of spot would say that it was one of the worst.
That doesn't even resonate with me. What does Temu do?
It's a mobile shopping app.
Okay.
They started their first real kind of advertising in the U.S. was last year's Super Bowl.
Okay.
That kicked it off. They were one of the most downloaded apps in the Google App Store and the Apple App Store all of last year. They followed it up with a bigger bet this year.
That's EDO CEO Kevin Krim speaking with hosts Paul Sweeney and Alex Steele on Bloomberg Radio earlier this week. The Super Bowl was also in Las Vegas for the first time. Scarlett, Damian, and I caught up with Anna Sainsbury, co-founder and CEO of GeoComply, a data collection and cybersecurity firm. We spoke about the growth of sports betting and broke down the numbers from the Super Bowl. Here's a portion of that conversation.
I mean, I think it's important to keep it into context that only 50% of Americans have access to legal online sports betting options at the moment. So we are still seeing a tremendous growth. Like you said, 22% is quite tremendous. One of the sort of bigger stats, I guess, that we're also looking at is that there's been a 28% increase in net new accounts from last year. So that's 13.7 million new accounts, which I think speaks a lot to the fact that people are obviously very engaged in the NFL and wanting to set up accounts with these licensed legal companies that they are now seeing pop up in their states.
Do you have a sense of where these new accounts are opening? Are they in California? Are they in the Kansas City market?
Well, unfortunately, it's not legal. California has been an ongoing licensing legalization discussion, but it is in a lot of the key states. East Coast corridor has primarily legalized. Obviously, online sports betting is legal in Nevada as well. So we have seen tremendous growth, but we are still without legal gaming options in big states like California as well as Texas.
Can you tell us how much of the accounts were in Nevada then? Because it's an easy drive if you're in certain parts of California to get across the border.
It is. Actually, I think for a lot of the betting that we're seeing in the growth, Nevada has been like an existing large market. Much of the growth that we've seen, some of it has been within Nevada, but still primarily people are placing their sports wagers within the sports books on property in casinos. And mm-hmm. So for Las Vegas and the Super Bowl being in Las Vegas, the growth within that market is still primarily within the land-based casinos.
Anna, minutes before the Super Bowl, I mean, some people like myself are watching Post Malone sing America the Beautiful, but minutes before kickoff, GeoComply saw a massive spike in traffic. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, apparently it was the highest transaction per second recording ever on your systems, nearly doubling last year's peak. I'm just curious to hear what that means.
Number one, it's of course because new states are opening up. Two, people that were betting with these offshore illegal sites that don't have the measurements of giving tax revenue to states, responsible gaming controls, age and ID restrictions, they are now setting up accounts with these legally licensed companies that they are building brand trust with. And so we have seen that growth across the market.
There's the simple thing that you guys do. When I say simple, it has to comply. You guys are making sure that whoever is going to make the bet is in the state legally where they're going to make the bet. And you guys have, what, more than 800 data points to make sure that that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I think one thing that is always true is fraudsters are constantly innovating, keeping us on our toes. A lot of conversations have been happening about AI and its impact on the digital economy. And so for us, that means we're having to work very hard to constantly stay ahead of those fraudsters to make sure that we can, with a high degree of certainty, guarantee that we know exactly where that user is. In addition, working with our customers to make sure that those that are placing bets are within the state, but also of legal gaming age.
Yeah, definitely a concern. And this is why your firm is engaged in all of this. Can you give us a sense of the concern and the actions, the steps taken to fend off potential cyber attacks, before a busy weekend like the Super Bowl weekend? Given that there's going to be lots of fraudsters taking a look at how this might be the perfect time to overwhelm systems with fraudulent activity and hacks.
Sure. Well, GeoComply's technology in terms of the cybersecurity side, we really focus on the spoofing that would happen at a player level. So not so much the massive cyber attacks that you've heard about more recently on sites coming down, but to make sure on a per transaction basis that user's device and location can be trusted. So we would be looking for things like account takeover, those that are manipulating their location, potentially being from a sanctioned jurisdiction like Russia, to make sure that they're actually within the state of Nevada or in the state of New York, and that they are controlling that device and of legal age.
That's Anna Sainsbury. She's the co-founder and CEO of data collection and cybersecurity firm GeoComply. Now, we can't mention the Super Bowl without mentioning what happened this past week in Kansas City. More than 20 people were wounded and at least one person killed by gunshots during the Chiefs Super Bowl celebration near Union Station, an entertainment center in Missouri. Our hearts go out to all those victimized in Kansas City. There's no easy way to transition from there, but we now turn to something a whole lot brighter. A big star investing in women's sports. Tennis superstar Naomi Osaka spoke to Bloomberg's Paul Wallace about her future in the sport and her investments. Here's a portion of that conversation.
When you look at your average athlete, they sort of do a few endorsements here or there, but you've done a lot beyond your endorsements. You've invested in women's football in the US. You've invested in pickleball. You've got the production company Hanakuma, and you've also got Evolve, the sports management company. What was the reason for going into all those things, and what's next? What's your next big investment?
I think for me, I always feel like I go towards things I believe in, or not even things, companies and brands, and just investing in women's sport has always been a really big thing for me. Starting a production company, my dad's always had cameras around, so storytelling was kind of natural, and just having that opportunity and knowing that no other female athlete has started a production company was shocking news. And I don't know, just trying to do things that people haven't done before and learning along the way, even if we stumble. I think that's always been my biggest mantra.
And just in particular, when it comes to women's football and pickleball, why those two things? Is that something you think is just, an investment that's going to be a really good one over the next, 10 years or so?
For me, watching how big female sports has become over the years and knowing how much it takes to be an athlete. Investing in North Carolina, it wasn't that much of a difficult decision. And I also just really love watching soccer, and especially during the World Cup, it's really fun. But pickleball was kind of the unknown for me. I think it's a sport that obviously it's been around, but it feels like it just blew up. And learning about it and seeing, I guess, LeBron and Mav invest in it was something that kind of leaned me more towards thinking it was a good idea.
That's tennis star Naomi Osaka speaking with Bloomberg's Paul Wallace in Abu Dhabi. Be on the lookout for that full conversation on a special edition of the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. Find that on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Coming up, Tiger Woods has a new partner after his split from Nike. We break down the new deal next on the Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr, along with Scarlett Fu and Damian Sassauer. And we got some big money again, as usual. Tiger Woods, he has launched his brand with TaylorMade after he split with Nike. And with us, who wrote a brilliant article about that, Max Adler, our own Bloomberg's Max Adler. Welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports.
Thank you guys for having me.
Well, this is a gentleman, 48 years old, golf legend. It doesn't make a difference whether he wins another tournament or not. That name alone is going to sell a lot of TaylorMade golf.
Oh, 100%. I mean, this guy has totally cemented his legacy on the sport. He's got 15 major championships, 82 PGA Tour wins, and he still has a giant fan base throughout the sport. All of the young guys that come up through the sport idolize this man. A lot of them, in honor of him, would wear his tradition of red on Sundays. And that leads us to his new brand with TaylorMade, which is aptly named Sunday Red for Tiger's tradition of always wearing a red shirt on the final day of tournaments.
Right, and that's tied to his mother telling him that red is his power color. But I'm curious, Max, why would he go to TaylorMade from Nike? He basically put Nike on the map when it comes to golf, because Nike did not have a golf division before Tiger Woods. And now he's going to something that's specific to golf with TaylorMade Golf. I mean, it feels like he's going from big to small.
Well, it seems like Nike didn't come through with the money that he was asking for. They knew that this was coming for quite some time. They knew that the contract was going to end at the end of 2023, and they weren't able to put anything together. Tiger definitely brought that brand a lot of money over the years. When he first started with Nike, they had a fledgling golf business, and now they're one of the leading manufacturers of both golf clubs and golf equipment. But I don't think that Nike was going to give him the terms that he wanted. And it seems like TaylorMade gave him the autonomy that he was really looking for, similar to what Michael Jordan has with the Jordan brand over at Nike.
Well, Max, you're taking me right down the, you know, kind of path I want to go to here. I mean, let's think about, you know, who TaylorMade Golf is. I mean, it's a company that was formed in 1979 by the son of pro golfer Gary Adams. It's got a kind of market cap estimated for a private company of $1.7 billion. I think it was sold to a South Korean, you know, investor not long ago. But here's what I'm thinking. Is he getting equity in this company? Because, I mean, how can they possibly compete to bid for his services against Nike?
Yeah, so they did not disclose the financial details of this agreement, but it's safe to assume that he got a pretty hefty signing bonus. And I do believe that he has an equity stake in the brand that he will benefit based off of the success of this brand.
Remember back in the day when Nike first signed Tiger Woods? And it was, you know, at the time, it was like for several million dollars. And people were thinking like, Nike, are you crazy? Yeah. Well, that turned out to be one of the best things Nike ever did. And it turned out to be cheap.
Yeah, $600 million cheap, Michael Barr.
$600 million. My goodness, man. Wow. It just,
definitely.
Max, everybody benefited from this.
Yeah, you know, it definitely was a mutually beneficial relationship. I mean, like, Nike helped to mythologize Tiger Woods' legend. Starting with his pro debut in 1996, he steps onto the tee at the Greater Milwaukee Open, and Nike two days later launches its Hello World campaign ad, which was a riff off of comments that he made during a press conference before the tournament started. And that was like his introduction to the world. And for the next 27 years, him and Nike had several very important advertising campaigns that both helped Tiger Woods to become the media darling that he was for quite some time. And then also it drove a lot of revenue to Nike. I mean, they became one of the biggest names in the sport. There are countless other Nike golfers right now that are carrying the torch. although there is no name that has ever come close to being as big as Tiger Woods in that sport. So it does seem like they're going to have some ground to make up now.
So one thing, I mean, we knew that Tiger Woods and Nike were parting ways because we had heard about that in advance, and we just didn't know who Tiger Woods was going to sign with next when it comes to his apparel deal. We know that Tiger Woods' son, Charlie Woods, seems to be wearing a lot of Greyson apparel, and I believe he has some kind of partnership or some kind of deal with that company. There was a lot of speculation that Tiger Woods would be joining his son, Charlie, in working with Greyson Clothier. Do we know anything about how that might have developed or whether that was even actually a possibility?
It seems like TaylorMade and Tiger have been in discussions about this for quite some time. So TaylorMade and Tiger had a relationship for, I believe, about 5 or 6 years at this point. Tiger has been using TaylorMade clubs, and he has his own line of clubs with TaylorMade. I know that there was some speculation about that when Charlie and Tiger played in a tournament recently together, and they were both seen not in Nike apparel, and that definitely led to some speculation. But I do think that this TaylorMade, the discussions with TaylorMade have been in the talks for quite some time at this point.
So, Michael Barr, take me through this, right? Since 1996, Tiger Woods earned more than $600 million with Nike, right? And we just announced that, no, let's take a stab at it. You know, TaylorMade's market cap is something on the order of 1.75 to, say, 2 billion U.S. I'm looking at companies like FootJoy and Titleist at 3.5 to 4. I'm looking at Callaway at 4.5 billion. I mean, we don't know, obviously, what the breakdown is in terms of what equity he might get out of this. But even if it was 10, 15%, and with that type of upside and growth to become just another Callaway, I mean, you can almost understand why this makes sense for him, no?
Oh, yes. I mean, definitely. It does seem like there's a lot of upside right now. He's trying to do something more than I think that what Callaway is doing. Like, I would say that Callaway and TaylorMade right now, their brands are focused on functionality. And it seems like Tiger's brand is trying to focus on both functionality and fashion to compete with brands like Malbon that are becoming very popular. Malbon just did a pretty sexy partnership, if I may say so myself, with Adidas. So I think that the potential for this brand is pretty high. If they grew their market cap, if they doubled it to match a brand like Callaway, I think that Tiger would come away with a lot of money from that.
We brought up earlier about his son, Charlie Woods, and there's no question that Charlie Woods is going to benefit from this deal.
Oh, definitely. Not only is there a lot of hype surrounding him just because he's Tiger's son, but he does seem to be a good golfer. He's going to have some star power. And I think that it'll be mutually beneficial for both him and TaylorMade.
Yeah, I mean, his son can play. I mean, obviously, Tiger Woods taught his son very well. We didn't have a Mike Douglas episode, man, that he could go on. Now, if you don't know the story, by the way, I need to explain it. Tiger Woods, when he was very little, went on the Mike Douglas show. And Bob Hope was also a guest on the show. And he showed off his skills and just charmed the crowd.
So right now, I'd like you to meet Tiger Woods and his father, Earl Woods.
Flash forward to today. My God, he's 48. That means that was 45. I saw that episode. Okay, you know what? I'm done talking. Go ahead. Rattled my cage.
Maxwell, it's funny because some of the brands you're mentioning here, you know, I actually do golf and, you know, so I know who Malbon is. A lot of people don't. And, you know, I think if you like look at, you know, GQ or any of these magazines, it's kind of widely regarded as the quote unquote the most, air quotes, by the way, I'm air quoting now, most stylish golf brand. What's interesting is Nike was always kind of thought of as, I don't know, the most affordable golf brand, right? So I wonder how he adapts to this. I mean, is he going to be, you know, more active on social? Is he going to be wearing, you know, the hoodies and as opposed to the collared shirts? I mean, what lies in store for the style for men's golf that comes off the back of this, I wonder?
Yeah, so I don't know the price point of this item, but Tiger was very excited about the cashmere Sunday red hoodies.
Oh, there we go. That's what we need.
So it's going to be both ends of the spectrum. You know, they also had some like, you know, traditional looking golf polos that looked to be like that athletic wicking type of material. So I think it's going to be on both ends of the spectrum. But yeah, no, this brand will definitely try to appeal to some clientele with a higher, some more spending power.
And TaylorMade, by the way, is owned by a South Korean private equity firm, Centroid Investment Partners. That happened in 2021. So I'm guessing also there's going to be a lot of investment in the Asian market, South Korea, China, Japan being
That's
sources
a
of a
yeah.
lot of golf talent as well. So I'm guessing that they're going to be marketing to women and to kids.
Yes, definitely. Like they're first starting off with a men's line of apparel, but they are going to then start dropping kids and women's lines, and they're also going to expand into footwear eventually. First, they're starting off by launching strictly in North America, but they also have plans to expand globally.
You know,
and you're right. Like, Asia right now is a prime market to grow that sport, and you're seeing a lot of other U.S. professional sports leagues that are trying to go after the Asian market right now in a similar way that the NBA was able to do so over the last couple of years. You see Major League Baseball is about to kick off their season in Seoul, Korea. So I think you're very right that that is a very important market.
And Max, you're right. I mean, we just had LIV Golf in Singapore, right? And you know, that brings up another interesting point, right? Because it seems to me that the PGA, I mean, don't get me wrong, the PGA is the standard bearer, but I mean, from an international perspective, it is not, right? I mean, so, I mean, in many respects, doing what he's doing it and focusing on Asia, perhaps, and taking advantage of sort of that market might be another motivating factor for this. But that is a very excellent point, Scarlett Fu.
Every once in a blue moon.
Max, I love Tiger Woods' line when he unveiled the in California. He says, "It won't help you hit it further, but you'll look better than you do right now."
Which, red cashmere hoodie. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot for me to like look better. But anyway, Max Adler, our very own Bloomberg, wrote an excellent article about this in Tiger Woods. Thank you so much, sir, for joining us on the Bloomberg Business of Sports.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
That's Bloomberg's Maxwell Adler. Special thanks to him for joining us on the show. Coming up, it's NBA All-Star Weekend time, and we're checking in on the host city with Indiana Pacers president and COO Mel Raines.
We moved All-Star Saturday night with the league to Lucas Oil Stadium, so 35,000 members of our community and fans could attend that event, and they're doing it on an LED court for the first time, which is going to be, I think it's just going to be a super cool experience for everybody who can come. And then, of course, the All-Star game itself in Gainbridge Fieldhouse Sunday night. There's over 150,000 ticketed opportunities for the weekend between the concerts and crossover and all these other events, which is more than the league has ever had.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Hello, welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports, where we explore some of the big money, and I'm talking about big old money in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr.
I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Damien Sassauer.
How would you like to meet the president and chief operating officer of the Pacers Sports Entertainment? Well, ta-da, here we are. Mel Raines, I'm so happy to talk with you. First of all, welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports.
Well, thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
You are on a small list of women running NBA arenas, the Pacer home arena, home to the 2024 NBA All-Star Weekend. And what an honor. First of all, congratulations.
Thanks. This has been several years in the making, so we're very excited that the weekend is finally here.
Can you take us through, because you're in, you know, very slim company. Needs to be more of you guys in this world here of women in the high offices of the NBA. Why haven't there been more women in the NBA high offices?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I'm new to sports. I made a career transition about 10 years ago. I started here with the Pacers 9 years ago, and I worked in politics for 20 years before that. But I would say that a lot of the teams, ours especially, have been very intentional in the last, 10 years, certainly five, especially to diversify at all levels of the company. I think where I started with the company our facility operations is certainly an area that needs improvement. And I think a lot of teams are, again, being intentional in who they're grooming. You know, it takes time. If you're hiring a diverse staff at a younger age, I didn't get this job when I was 25. So, it takes a little time to groom people into it. But I think the NBA, amongst all of the major sports leagues, is one of the better ones in terms of diversity across the board, and certainly proud to be on a team in this league.
You had mentioned your career in politics. You worked in various roles on six Republican national conventions, including serving as COO for the 2008 RNC, senior advisor for the 2012 and 2016 conventions. Can you talk a little bit about the common threads between organizing those events, overseeing those events, and also being one of the principal architects of the 2012 Super Bowl and what's to come, which is, of course, the 2024 NBA All-Star Weekend? How are they similar?
There's a lot of similar threads. The cities certainly bid on, whether it's a political convention or an all-star game, because of the economic impact. And so those are significant, heads in beds and restaurants and bars. And there's just so many things related to these events that help a local economy for a short period of time. What's very different about them is that whether it's the Super Bowl or the NBA All-Star Game or, other All-Star Games or Pro Bowls, is there's an economic piece for the league or the event owner. And with the Republican and Democrat national conventions, they're not making money off of those events. Mm-hmm. Those are, basically a chance to have earned media and own TV for 5 to 6 days. And there's a huge impact to that, just like it is for these other events, but they're not selling tickets to that event, if that makes sense. And so it's a little bit different in that regard, but I think it's a chance for any city that's hosting to really shine on a world stage for the week that they're hosting. And that's why Indianapolis has been on so many of these sporting events and hopefully exceeded the expectations of all the attendees and fans and the NFL. And we're hoping to exceed the NBA's this weekend.
And Mel, this is nothing new for you, right? I mean, you worked on the 2012 Super Bowl, and you've probably involved in a number of different sports throughout the Indy area. The All-Star Game, the Indy 500. I think this year you also have the U.S. Olympic swimming and diving trials, right, at Lucas Oil. But let's talk about the Gainbridge Fieldhouse, and let's talk about, we won't talk about the Indiana Pacers, but let's talk about some of the other events you have there, right? I mean, and I just happen to be, looking at the agenda for the next few months, and I see the Boys and Girls High School State Basketball Finals, and I think about the Hickory Huskers, I think about Jimmy Chitwood, I think about Butler University's Hinkle Fieldhouse. Talk to us a little bit about Indiana sports, about basketball, what it means to the community, and how you're taking advantage of that.
Mel, he's crying over here. I'm looking at it now.
Yeah. Well, Gainbridge Fieldhouse, we just finished a $400 million renovation, and we added a Bicentennial Unity Plaza and a new restaurant entertainment complex next door. So it's really best in world-class facility. And I think we probably do more basketball games than any other arena in the country. We certainly, I think, are the best place to see a basketball game. We were purpose-built for basketball. We have an offset hockey configuration, which means it's not the best place in the world to watch a hockey game, although we can host one. And because of that, we do the high school finals. We have often held the Big Ten men's and women's tournaments. We have the NCAA first and second round this year,
right, yeah.
The Pacers, the Fever. And we also, I think it was just a few years ago, we had 54 basketball games in 49 days in February and March, in addition to some concerts. So I think we have as much basketball as anyone. Indiana's basketball crazy, Hoosier Historia is alive and well in our city and our state. And we just take a lot of pride in being able to host all these various levels. And they're all unique in terms of having the high school finals. We usually do Pacers on Friday night, and the high school first game is at 10 a.m. or something on Saturday. And it's just such a different feel, but equally fun. We get 11 or 12,000 people for the high school state boys and girls finals. And it's just really fun events.
You're taking over as the Pacers CEO in June when the current CEO, Rick Fusen, retires. Can you take us through about what it's like when you see somebody like Rick Fusen, what it's like to work with him and the experiences involved?
Yeah, I mean, he's been a phenomenal leader in our company for 40. He's about to have his 40th anniversary. He started in 1984. He was hired to lead the 1985 NBA All-Star Game for the company, which is the last time we hosted the All-Star Game. So he's bookending his career around this this special event. And, you know, it's hard to take over for someone who's got 40 years of knowledge in their brain, but he's done a really nice job of mentoring me over the last few years. And while we're transitioning for the next few months, he's staying on as a senior advisor for Herb Simon and for me. So I can call him whenever I need to, and he'll be available, which is also nice. But he's a good teacher. He's naturally a teacher. So every day since I've been here, he's been teaching me something. I learn something new almost every day in this job. And so I'm really grateful for what he's done to help me get to this place.
Can you talk a little bit about the conversations you have with other COOs or presidents and soon to be CEOs when you take on that role of other franchises? Because obviously there's a lot of best practices. There's a lot of sharing of what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah, what I love about the NBA is everybody is very good about sharing those ideas. You're not either going to a Houston Rockets game or an Indiana Pacers game on a given night. And so whether it's Gretchen Scheer, who's the president for the Rockets, or Gillian Zucker with the Clippers, both of whom are friends of mine, other team presidents around the league are really good about when you call or you ask for help for something, they pretty quickly respond, as do we. We're hosting, a lot of them are coming into town for All-Star Weekend. The Warriors are hosting next year, and the Clippers are the year after that. And other teams who are looking to bid will be in town, and we are pretty open book about how we've executed the event, what our plans were. We were originally supposed to host in 21, and Cleveland hosted in 22. And before the pandemic, we were actively talking to Cleveland about how we were organizing our host committee and how we could help them make their All-Star game the best it could be. So whether it's food and beverage or technology or game operations, the league has some really great best practices. Jonathan Tillman, who heads team marketing and business operations now, called Teambo, at the league, is great about pulling us all together. We just had a meeting in Miami a month ago. And so I think that's one of the best parts about the NBA. Adam Silver is such a great leader, is, you know, we're in this together, and the teams really do share a lot of best business practices.
Yeah, Mel, we had Gillian on not long ago, and wow, the Clippers are having a hell of a year. I mean, let's talk a little bit about what fans can expect at All-Star Game weekend this weekend. I mean, I'm looking here about this NBA crossover experience, the dual venue format with the dunk contest and the three-point shootout. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, what the audience can expect this year.
This weekend is so fun. There's so many different events. It's unlike, we hosted the entire March Madness tournament in 2021 in Indianapolis, which was fantastic. This is just such a different weekend. There's the Rising Stars game and the Celebrity game and open practice and crossover fan event. And we moved All-Star Saturday night with the league to Lucas Oil Stadium. So 35,000 members of our community and fans could attend that event. And they're doing it on an LED court for the first time, which is going to be, I think it's just going to be a super cool experience for everybody who can come. And then, of course, the All-Star game itself in Gainbridge Fieldhouse Sunday night. There's over 150,000 ticketed opportunities for the weekend between the concerts and crossover and all these other events, which is more than the league has ever had. So if you love basketball or NBA fashion, culture, music, food, this is the weekend for you. There's plenty of opportunities. And then We're dressing up downtown. We call Indy is the home court and the fan is the all-star. So we've got active DJs downtown. We've got some artistic lighting. We're activating some spaces with local diverse food offerings. And so we have free bus rides downtown for the weekend. So everyone in our community can come downtown. If you don't have a ticket to the game, you can still come downtown and be a part of the weekend, which is really important to us.
I'm so glad you bring that up, because hosting big events like the All-Star Game or weekend in this case, or the Super Bowl, means you're limited to the arena capacity, which I believe is 18,000 for Gainbridge Fieldhouse. So when you talk about these plans to make the city inviting and accessible to folks who just want to be there but can't get into the game itself, the arena itself, how involved is the NBA in coming up with these alternative entertainment options? Or is it something that kind of crops up on its own? I mean, what's the dialogue like, the conversation like with the small business owners and the rest of the city?
Yeah, so the NBA rewards program is one thing that the league started back, I think, in Chicago in 2020, which is an opportunity for local businesses to be a part of the event. Fans check in through a QR code and accumulate points, and they can actually, if they go to enough businesses, go to the NBA All-Star Game for free. They earn tickets and other swag and things. And so that's we have over 300, close to 400 businesses throughout the state of Indiana that are registered in that program. And in general, I think the league has been incredibly collaborative with us, and the vision that Herb Simon, and who's our team owner, and the Simon family had to make this a community event. So whether that's, we've done 24 legacy projects throughout the state of Indiana as part of our host committee, $50,000 brick and mortar projects throughout the state, everything from basketball courts to STEM labs. We're packing 1 million meals for Hoosier families over 24 hours, starting Thursday afternoon into Friday afternoon. And the last shift of packing will include some of the All-Stars and Adam Silver and a lot of the other NBA VIPs coming into town. So they've been, when we've had ideas like this, which I think they thought might be a little crazy in the beginning, they've jumped on board and have supported them 100%, including All-Star Saturday night. That was a bit of a leap to say, we think we can sell 35,000 tickets to this event, to your point, that would have been less than half that number of people in Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And for us to say, we're okay not hosting that premier event in our building because it's better for the league and our community to host it at the football stadium, they jumped right on board with that idea and priced the upper tickets at $24. So I think the last year, the lowest price ticket for that event was $500. And so they've really just helped us embrace what we wanted this to be from the very beginning. And the very beginning was in 2017 when we bid on this, and then it pushed. So literally, this is 7 years in the making.
Wow, yeah.
And I think it's going to be a really fun weekend.
Mel, you speak so glowingly of Adam Silver and the NBA and your relationship with them. And, you know, it just takes me back. I'm looking, you know, at your background here. I mean, forget about the Republican National Conventions and the committee and everything you did there. I mean, I'm looking at, you know, serving as an assistant at one point to Vice President Dick Cheney. You began your career on Capitol Hill with former U.S. Senator Dan Coats of Indiana. Talk to us about the different, environment of working with the NBA today and working in Washington back then. And how it prepared you, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I'm very grateful I worked in Washington back then and not today. I can tell you that. And I was lucky to work for some really great elected officials who I think, were in it for the right reasons. And I'm very proud of the people I've been able to serve. What I would say about the transition into working for an NBA team and working with the league is that when you work for an elected official, you work for them and their family often. And I work for Herb Simon and Steve Simon, his son, and the Simon family.
Right.
It's a small family business in a lot of respects. And we are a model franchise. We have one of the only teams that has an NBA team, a WNBA team, a G League team, a 2K team, and we run our building, which we take a lot of pride in. We're all in on what the NBA is doing. And Herb Simon and Adam Silver have a very close relationship. And it feels very similar to politics in a lot of ways, although it's a business, certainly. My background was more on the operational side of politics and the political side. And we're a small town here in Indianapolis, and we're a state capital too. So I get to flex my political muscle a little bit, but also my operational and my business side. And so it's really, it's for me, it's a really good fit. I don't do well in sort of large companies that are pretty plodding. I'm better in small chaotic environments, whether that's on the U.S. Senate in 1991 during the Clarence Thomas nomination hearings, answering the phones, or the All-Star Game in 2024. It all feels pretty similar. And I've been very lucky in my career to work for some great people and have been given some really great opportunities.
I really like the way you describe that, small chaotic environments.
Mel,
my life, basically.
Chaotic environment. Mel, if you would just let Rick Carlisle know to give Obi Toppin a few more minutes there, that'd be great also. I don't know.
I have a really good relationship with Coach Carlisle, and it's partially because I don't give him any advice on his job, and he is very nice to me when he needs something. We do it quickly. He's a great colleague. I feel really lucky that he's our coach at this time with such a special team that we have on the floor.
I want to go back to something you had mentioned about the All-Star Game and the fans who attend. Is there any data on what kind of fan attends All-Star Games? Is it the same group of people year after year, or are they first-timers from the host city? What's the breakdown? Because that obviously has implications in terms of how you make each annual weekend distinct, so that it's not like you've gone to one, you've seen them all.
It does. It does. And the league, I think you all know, the NBA doesn't sort of sit and let everything be the same year after year. In any regard, that was the case with the in-season tournament this year. The play-in tournament started a couple of years ago.
Good
so even if you do go every year, I think it is slightly different. So what we understand is of the fans we expect coming downtown, about 125,000, 1 in 3 will be from outside of central Indiana. So there's probably, a good, I would say, 30,000 people that regularly go to these, whether they're sponsors or fans, super fans who like to come to this every year and see the best players in the world. But there's a lot of people that will do this once in their lifetime. And so we're trying to make sure this is special for both ends of that equation.
Mel Raines, president and chief operating officer of the Pacers Sports Entertainment and soon to be CEO of the Pacers Sports as of June of this year. Thank you so much, Mel, for joining us on the Bloomberg Business of Sports. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you all for having me. I really, it was fun, and hopefully you all watch this Sunday night on TNT.
Our special thanks to Mel Raines. She's president and COO and soon to be CEO of the NBA's Indiana Pacers. This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. We are here each and every week at the same time. For my colleagues Scarlett Fu and Damian Sassauer, I'm Michael Barr. Thank you for joining us. Tune in again next week for the latest on the stories moving big old money in the world of sports. You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.